This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time 1203. It's great to have you with us for the Friday edition of the Noon Business Hour. As another trading week is about to wrap up, not necessarily on a positive note either. On today's Noon Business Hour, Entrepreneur Friday. A lot of entrepreneurs get their starts in restaurants. We'll talk about that and also some of the possible pitfalls. And Hasbro buys Peppa Pig. In the next segment, we'll talk about the market for existing homes. But right now, trade, the economy, China, the Fed, all of that dominating the day's business news. The Fed chairman is talking about a deteriorating global outlook. We're joined to talk about it by Robert Dye, chief economist of Comerica Bank. He's based in Dallas. Robert, I guess give us a thumbnail of what the Fed chair is saying and what you think about it.
Well, the Fed Chair Jay Powell, obviously very concerned about the cooling global environment. As you said, Germany, second quarter GDP, mild contraction, the UK, mild contraction, China clearly slowing down. So it does look like the global economy is getting cooler. At the same time, the Fed Chair was worried about low inflation. And a new phrase that the Fed has been using lately, risk management. And that seems to be a catch-all term to include things obviously like trade wars and Brexit and other things that really don't have standard economic analogs or playbooks that the Fed can use.
Yeah, the standard, you really can't really react to this when it changes day to day. It's been tough for investors to know what to do with their money. It also must create problems for the Fed.
Well, certainly. And, you know, Fed's job is to maximize employment within the context of price stability. So their mandate is to keep the economy running. And it's very difficult for them to do that when we have a very unpredictable situation between the U.S. and China, as we've already seen this morning with China threatening to escalate tariffs and the Trump administration already planning a pushback. And so the Fed is caught. You know, there's a saying here and a saying in Africa, when elephants fight, it's the grass that suffers. And so that's what we're seeing right now, the Fed really caught between China and the Trump administration.
And this word that the Fed is looking at, some of the same data that we're seeing here, the trade war, among other things, are having an impact, which makes you wonder, is there a point where one or both sides blink and actually come to a deal? It's easy to talk about until things start slowing down.
Well, certainly. And we're seeing pain in the U.S. Even though the economy generally is in good shape, parts of the U.S. economy, particularly the manufacturing sector and the agricultural sector, we're seeing some pain. We're seeing pain in China. So there is an awareness out there that this ongoing trade war is bad for both economies. But, finding the solution to how to unwind this thing, that seems to be escaping us right now. In my estimation, this thing keeps going for a while. It may be the status quo here for some time to come.
And is there a way that even, the temporary pain, is there a way that on the backside it's good? I mean, is there a possibility something good comes out of all this?
Well, certainly, and that's the whole idea, is to reset the playing field or get that so-called level playing field. But the issue is really the pain, the upfront pain is asymmetric with respect to the backside payoff, and we're seeing it concentrated in specific sectors. We can measure, we can see it, we're all living through it, and the payoff is at some point in the future diffused and spread across different industries, and we're not certain about when and if and how it comes. So it's a symmetry problem. It's an asymmetric cost-benefit analysis.
Always good analysis by you, Robert Dye, chief economist at Comerica Bank, based in Dallas. U.S. new home sales dropped sharply last month as the housing market continues its slow crawl forward. Joining us with the latest on today's data and local housing trends, Steve Kirch, assistant managing editor for Market Watch here in Chicago. Steve, for people who've not yet seen the data, just maybe heard about it, kind of give us a thumbnail of what the data shows.
Sure, Cisco. Today we had the new home sales nationwide showed an almost 13% drop to 635,000 units. Not a good sign, but a good sign on the other side was they revised the June numbers up to 728,000 sales. So that's it's a very volatile data point, those new home sales. It just goes to show you, though, that the housing market's gotten a little schizophrenic in terms of up and down and whether people want to buy new or used homes. The day before today, Thursday, we had the existing home sales that were up slightly, and a good number on the supply side. That is, the inventory is down, but there's only about 4 months of supply on the market. So people are still buying homes, both new and used. But, there's certainly some headwinds out there as well.
And so when it comes to that, to buying used, buying new, is there any way to figure out what sorts of things lead consumers one way or another? I mean, outside of just personal taste.
A lot of it depends on market. In Chicago, you have a lot of newer construction, especially condos in the downtown area. Those houses have been popular. Existing homes in the city, even though the existing home sales were up nationwide in the city of Chicago themselves for July, they were down 5%. So, there's part of it's what choice you have. A lot of homes in the city, a lot of existing homes, there isn't a lot of inventory on them, so you have to go to new. But then you've got a pricing question, because the newer homes tend to be pricier than the existing homes. So it's kind of depends what market you're in.
Interest rates at all have an influence on this? I mean, they've been dropping, but that probably wouldn't impact new versus existing.
You know, lower mortgage rates, we're at about 3.5%. That's, really about as good as we've ever gotten historically. Those should be a positive for the housing market, and they do certainly help. But you also have home buyers still having to have a good enough credit score. Lenders aren't just letting anybody get a mortgage today like maybe we saw before the housing crisis in 2007, and also folks got to come up with down payments, and it's a little tough when so many people can't even come up with a $1,000 emergency fund. Raising 20% down for a home purchase is just out of reach for a lot of people.
Yeah, maybe a lot of money. Thanks, Steve Kirch, Assistant Managing Editor at Market Watch here in Chicago. Up next, Rivers Casino's owner looks to expand into Waukegan.
Making sense of your dollars. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The group that owns the Rivers Casino near O'Hare is placing its bets on a new location in Waukegan. We're talking with Greg Hines, columnist for Crain's Chicago Business. Greg, Rivers, I guess, wanting to expand and move up the road a little bit.
Yeah, they are in the wealthy part of the metropolitan area, which is north and west already in the Des Plaines area, and apparently they've concluded that there's more money to be made in this state by moving just north of the North Shore, not too far from Wisconsin, where maybe they can get some business from the casinos on that state. It's after the kerfuffle over where the Chicago casino ought to be. It's kind of good news because it indicates at least somebody thinks there's money to be made here, providing the tax rates are kept within reason.
Well, and it's one of the things that I was interested in, the fact that you have people vying for the Waukegan casino at the same time as we're hearing that the Chicago casino may not make money. So someone sees a difference here.
The difference is 33% off the top. That's the difference in the tax rate. In Waukegan, the casino operators will pay about 40%, give or take, to one government or another. But in Chicago, there's an additional 33% tax being imposed by the legislature on top of that, which brings the effective tax rate to 72%, according to a consultant for the state gaming board. That's a big difference, an extra one-third off the top, and that's why you have competition in Waukegan, and so far, real concerns about no competition at all in Chicago.
Well, it's the process here for Waukegan. You have people who say they're interested. I'm assuming there's a few hoops to go through.
Yeah, they pretty much make the decision themselves as to which of the six competing companies they want to pick. And then it goes to the board, to the gaming board, which probably will pretty much ratify, providing the folks in Waukegan do their due diligence okay. But the decision ought to basically be theirs.
Now, in general, you know, not specifically to any one casino. I mean, in general, have communities felt like the casinos have kind of lived up to what they promised? Because, I mean, ordinarily, a casino comes to town and it's, you know, streets are going to be paved with gold if you bring our casino to town. Are they a benefit?
Well, you know, I think you'd probably get a different answer in every town in which there are casinos. Some of them have done pretty well, and they've provided some ancillary benefits and hiring and revenue to local municipalities. Others have pretty much just put up a wall around themselves, and the visitors come in and go, but it doesn't do much for the rest of the town. I think it pretty much depends. And that's frankly one of the things that's on the table with the Chicago casino, because the idea is to make that a little bit different than most of the existing ones, which tend to be a facility with, located off in a corner surrounded by big parking lots. That the city, I think, is hoping for something a little different here.
And I know we talked about this with the Chicago casino. It seems like one of the big keys is getting people who don't live in the area to come to your casino.
Yeah, which is one of the other reasons holding off action on a Chicago casino, which is where you put it. The mayor has wanted to and a lot of people in minority communities who think that, hey, they haven't gotten their share of investment, they want to move it away out. But the problem is this consultant's report came in and said, hey, if you want to raise money and you want to keep taxes down, you need to put it downtown where tourists can just walk over from other hotels rather than going in a neighborhood they don't know and maybe a $15 cab ride.
Thanks so much, Greg Hines, columnist at Crain's Chicago Business. Still ahead, the president's latest China tweet, how it's moving Wall Street.
And 105.9 FM, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon, I'm Cisco Cotto. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. U.S.-China trade worries put Wall Street in a spin. Entrepreneur Friday, the company that can help you break into the restaurant business. Toy giant Hasbro makes a move to reach its audience on all screens. And Illinois reports its first death related to vaping. On Wall Street, the Dow down 526 points, the NASDAQ down 215, and the S&P is down 63. Oil back in the $53 range. It is down 3.5%. Sunshine in Chicagoland all day and all weekend, heading to a high of 75 degrees today. Right now, 72 at O'Hare, 73 Midway, 72 along Chicago's lakefront. The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Markets are down on the latest China-U.S. trade war worries. We're joined by a new guest, Brian Nick, chief investment strategist for Nuveen, based in New York. Brian, as you see these markets falling today, each of the major indexes down by more than 2%. What do you make of what you're seeing?
Well, first, Cisco, thanks very much for having me. And I think this is not unlike the other days like this that we've seen over the last 18 months. More often than not, when you see the market down this much, is because something has happened related to trade. And we got an escalation from the Chinese side this morning, $75 billion worth of tariffs set to go into effect at various points against U.S. goods later this year, including on September 1st. And then you saw the president retaliate via Twitter, promising countermeasures to what China proposed. So this escalation, unwelcome news for the U.S. economy and the Chinese economy, and doesn't bode well for corporate profits either.
And what do you tell investors in an environment like this? Because it seems like they wake up, they see something like this, and it's understandable that some of them may panic a little bit.
Yeah, that's certainly not a bad first reaction when you see these kinds of moves on a you know, just a couple of hour basis. But I think what we've been saying all along is, you know, it makes sense to stay invested. There are asset classes that are going to do well in this kind of environment. We've seen the rally in safer parts of the fixed income market, certainly on fears, on a flight to safety into longer duration U.S. Treasuries and other similar types of bonds. But there's also going to be outperformers in the equity market during periods like this. Companies that are not as exposed to trade, don't have their supply chains running through China when it seems like the president would very much like them to pull out of China, at least based on his remarks this morning. And you also have overall just kind of less economically sensitive parts of the market, whether it's utilities, whether it's consumer staples that don't tend to be as sort of cyclical as other parts of the market. So there's always going to be places to go for investors who want to be in the equity markets. We don't think the overall market is going to go much of anywhere over the balance of this year, but we think as earnings continue to accrue, even at a slower pace, that the next couple of years will be fine for investors who are holding on to their stock portfolio today.
Another challenge seems to be with the Fed and the fact that there doesn't seem to be much unity. It seems at least like there's some differences of opinions there. If that's the case, then what is an investor to do?
Yeah, so all this week we heard from members of the FOMC who were, most of whom were, some of them were voters, some of them not voters, but most of them were saying that they weren't so keen to keep cutting interest rates the way the Fed did in July. And as a result, you started to see the markets back off of some of the Fed hikes that they've been pricing in aggressively over the last couple of months. And the Fed's been getting pushed around a little bit by the market. The last rate cut in July came when the markets had 100% expectation that that was going to happen. So it makes sense for the Fed if it's not seeing the same things that the market is seeing, if it's not as keen to aggressively cut rates, for them to push back a little bit, at least rhetorically, from some of these more hawkish or more neutral members. But Powell himself this morning seemed to give the green light for at least a September rate cut and eliminated a piece of rhetoric from his comments when he referred to a mid-cycle adjustment in the July FOMC press conference. He didn't use that word today, and that's an indicator to me that he wants to at least leave the door open for more aggressive rate cuts, not just in September, but potentially in October and December as well. And certainly more days like this will be more likely to bring more aggressive rate cuts.
If you are an investor who's thinking for the long term, you know, if you're not just looking for short-term gains, how often do you look at that portfolio? How often do you rebalance? How often do you try to see how things are going? Obviously, there's a temptation to do it every single day, but how long? Are you talking quarterly? What is it?
Yeah, it's going to be a little bit different for every investor. It depends on, I think, your overall level of composure, how engaged you are with the markets. I think quarterly is about the most often that I look at it. There's some investors who are going to do it semi-annually or annually. Right now, if you're looking for the long term, the bad news is that interest rates are very low. So if you're just relying on fixed income and on bonds specifically to get you, you know, into your retirement, through your retirement, past your retirement, it's going to be much harder to do that. You're going to need a lot more money to live off of your savings today than you would have needed just a couple of months ago, let alone 10 or 20 years ago. But the good news here is that the equity market looks more attractively valued than the bond market at the moment. So those diversified investors still have opportunities to pick up returns. It's not going to be as easy as it was the last 10 years because you're not starting from the same very, very low basis for stocks as you were in 2009.
Now, is that a reason, you mentioned income stocks earlier, is that a reason to keep good dividend stocks as part of your portfolio even as you get toward retirement?
Absolutely. In fact, a lot of the S&P 500 stocks in terms of their dividend yield are comfortably out-yielding the U.S. bond market right now. And that's been historically a pretty good entry point for stocks. Anytime you see dividend yields greater than yields on the Treasury market or even parts of the corporate bond market, it's tended to be a period from which it makes sense to initiate an equity investment. We wouldn't just rely on the income. There's obviously going to be some companies that are going to be growing faster over time. You want to have some of that in your portfolio as well. But this has been a focus for us all year, and especially coming out of the mid-year outlook that we put out last month, which was, you know, think about income as a greater percentage of your overall total return, at least for the time being, because we thought those growthier parts of the market were going to have a tough time making headway in the second half of 2019.
Thanks so much for being with us, Brian Nick, Chief Investment Strategist at Nuveen, based in New York. Up next, it's Entrepreneur Friday. Need-to-know advice for people looking to open a restaurant.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Entrepreneur Friday on the Noon Business Hour. Today we're talking about opening a restaurant and the pitfalls to avoid. Joining us, Doug Roth, founder and president of the restaurant consulting firm Playground Hospitality here in Chicago. Doug, before we get into some specific tips, I just want to see if this is true. It seems like a lot of entrepreneurs who are not involved in restaurants maybe got their start in the restaurant business. Do you find that owning a restaurant, running a restaurant, giving it a try, is that a good gateway to people who then decide they're going to branch off?
Excellent question. I would have to say that there are people who have grown up in the industry and have found that the industry itself is a great, university for going on for other types of businesses, because it's really the hospitality business. And if you're good at hospitality, you're going to be great at other businesses as well. And it's a great training ground.
So for people who want to get started because they want to just stay in restaurants or end up in somewhere else, it seems like a lot of restaurants come and go, no matter what neighborhood I've lived in. You know, a new thing shows up, 6 months, a year later, it's gone. Seems like it is risky.
Extremely. I think that the most recent figure that I've seen is that about 1 out of 10 make it within the first year. When you start getting to the third year or so, you're in a little bit better place. Not much better, but you have a 3 in 10 shot. So it is extremely risky. In fact, I was with many years ago with President Clinton. Happened to ask him, I said he was going out of office, and I said, Mr. President, would you like to open a restaurant together? You can work the front of the house, I'll work the back of the house. And his comment was, it's way too tough a business for me. So even coming from a president, he acknowledges that it's a rough place to go.
Yeah, so it does sound, though, like it is more a, is it perseverance, a little bit of luck? I mean, as you mentioned, the longer you do it, the greater your chances.
What I really think it is, there's some luck that's involved, but I think it's also having a real good understanding of what the market segment is. And the market segment today tells you, hey, go and take a look at those things that are going to be cost-effective, that are those things that maybe are concepts that are all around us like pizza and burgers, and be able to really define and really go after a concept clarity that's very, very stealth-like. And you can do that through like pop-ups or food halls, something called ghost kitchens today, or food trucks. Those are good ways of starting out in the business without putting a lot of dollars down.
And are you looking for that niche? As you mentioned, burgers are big, but if you're not doing something at least a little different, why is someone going to come to you?
Well, that's what it's about. It's really creating that signature dish. It's the stone crabs at Joe's, or it's going for prime rib at Lowry's. It's having that difference or point of difference, and it's what it really is a crave. And think about, you know, Cisco, what do you crave? And you end up going to those places more often than not and ordering the same thing all the time.
I have several young kids, 3 of them, and so whenever we're thinking about going out, we always have kids in mind. Is that maybe not a niche, but is that something that anyone who wants to open a restaurant has to keep in mind?
Really good question. Huge. Actually, at this point, especially with, as we speak about millennials and millennial families, people are looking at food much differently than before, especially for their kids. It's not the days of Twinkies and peanut butter and jelly anymore. It's really what is going to be a healthful product, and what restaurants are responding to that with good products and good items on their menu that also satisfy you, mom and dad, and also are obviously looking towards the future customers, which are your kids.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many restaurants we go into, and it's like, okay, kids, do you want the chicken fingers, the grilled cheese, or the mac and cheese?
Right.
You know, that's about
exactly.
It, and then they're not excited about it.
You will start to see changes with that. Some of the projects we're working on today are looking at places like the Disneys of the world and other places that have historically have never had really great products are really going after today your kids and making sure that they're going to be obviously customers forever.
How important is other revenue beyond just sort of that dining experience? I'm thinking like the bar or before and after the meal, just other ways for restaurants to make a little money.
Really, what's the big area today, and you hear it all the time, and you speak about it as well, are really delivery right now. And Grubhub, Uber, others out there today. Now, I'm never certain about how that model works. We got into it very early on, and what happens is they take a chunk, obviously, out of your check, so to speak, when you're paying them, or they're paying you. They're paying you at a discount, and then they're upcharging, obviously, the guest. Or their customers. So that is a great way. Catering is a big way to make money. And, you know, certainly, as you mentioned, bar business. But bar business is changing a lot. You see places out there today that are entertainment, that are not just bars, but also going into the world today of bowling and different types of activities that are real important to help supplement, obviously, the alcohol.
Well, that's the experience economy, right? People want food, but they also want to have an experience.
Clearly. It's all experiential now, down to education on all the way to, as you say, going out to eat today and making it more than just an event, but it's really a family outing, or it's something that you are going to be able to look towards as remembering that experience and coming back and telling everyone about how great it was.
Thanks so much. Really good insight. Doug Roth, founder and president of the restaurant consulting firm Playground Hospitality here in Chicago, joining us with some advice for anyone wanting to open a restaurant. Still to come, we'll take a look at two story stocks in the retail sector, one doing well, one struggling, Hasbro and Foot Locker.
Conversation that's on the money. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Hasbro expanding its portfolio. Shares of Foot Locker are down on an earnings miss. Joining us with the latest, Jan Rogers Niffen, CEO of J. Rogers Niffen Worldwide, based in New York. Jan, let's begin with Hasbro. They're buying Peppa Pig and bringing that pig into the fold. And yet the stock is kind of getting hammered today, down 8%.
Well, they're paying a lot of money for the pig and all the things that go with Peppa Pig. They're not just buying Peppa Pig. They're buying the whole studio and everything that goes with it. But it is pretty exciting, and now people are actually expecting there might be a counter bid on the Peppa Pig from probably Mattel or someone else. So, there's a lot of excitement going on with that, but it's hard to imagine that this is a bad idea. I guess you can argue they're paying too much, but Hasbro, you know, they've been running second to Mattel. They need something to strengthen the brand. I think that anybody who's ever had a kid under the age of about, 15 right now must know Peppa Pig. So, I think it's a good move, but it is pretty pricey.
Yeah, my kids ask all the time if they could ever come to Daddy Pig's office. And when they say that in front of people who are not familiar with Peppa Pig, it's very awkward. It really is.
I guess it is.
Parents get it, though. PJ Masks, another one. I mean, I'm getting what you're saying here. If Hasbro, this is their market, these are good brands that a lot of parents know. And so maybe on the back end, they can end up making the investment worth it.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm not surprised that they're down on the announcement because of the price. But if this actually works, and it's hard to imagine that it won't, it's hard to think they could pay too much for Peppa Pig. I don't think that's going anywhere in the near future. It's still extraordinarily popular.
Let's talk about Foot Locker. Their stock down as well, as earnings pretty disappointing.
Yeah, Foot Locker's living in a tough place right now. Their numbers domestically didn't look all that bad, and they had reasonable numbers, but they were less than what was expected. And right now, if you're anything less than expected, you're getting hit pretty hard. But longer term, you know, our friends at Nike are doing everything they can to go direct to consumer, and they're doing everything they can to customize to go to direct to consumer, to sell you exactly the shoe you want and the color you want with your name on it or something. And that's going to put pressure on Foot Locker going forward. And we're seeing the same thing happen with the other big footwear foot brands as far as athletic shoes, and we're also seeing basketball doing really poorly. And so it's not surprising that Foot Locker's struggling a little bit. And remember, Foot Locker, as I say all the time, is the only person in the mall that actually works. How long can you continue to work in the mall when the mall traffic is down 7% consistently? But they seem to be last man standing, but it's still a tough place to be and a tough place to be doing business. And it's really hard when your biggest brands that you're selling are all trying to sell directly to your customer instead of to you if you're Foot Locker.
Yeah, really tough. Really, really tough.
That's going to get worse, not better.
Yeah, Jan Rogers Niffen, thanks so much. Always good insight. CEO of J. Rogers Niffen Worldwide.